we had a baby 6 months ago, and it's like, you're just, you life falls apart. I've just started listening to podcasts again.
This is Matt Dwyer.
And I'm a writer, comedian, and a podcaster, I guess. There you go. And I'm obsessed with My Favorite Murder.
My Favorite Murder? Is that your go-to show right now?
It's Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark, and it's all them just discussing murder. But then it's like I've become really freaked out because then I'm like parking my car and I'm sure
Is that like some weird duality too with having this like bring new life into the world and then like listening to people take life away?
Yeah. I've always been like kind of terrified. I mean, everybody's terrified of murder, but I was like, yeah. And now I'm just convinced like I'm constantly thinking like, oh, we're all going to, my whole family's just going to get murdered. It's a great way to live.
What has been your favorite, My Favorite Murder?
There was a guy in Sacramento called this Sacramento Vampire or something like that. And he did too much acid and it like sort of kicked his schizophrenia into overdrive. And he thought his blood was turning to powder. So he started off drinking rabbit blood to keep alive and stuff. And I guess one day he just went around Sacramento and just started going door to door. He would open up. If he would turn the doorknob and if it would let him in, he thought, okay, I can go in here and kill people. And
well, this has been the CSOC show. I'm Andrew Steven. Great way to start. That's insane.
It's like it was chilling. It was, and then like he went to the mall and he's like got blood on his sweatshirt and he like saw a girl he went to high school with and he was like, hey, didn't you used to ride motorcycles with Tommy or something? And she was like, got the hell out. But it was just, he was so like out of it that
he's just gone.
But it's fascinating.
No, I think there is. I mean, even as you were describing that, I was very horrified, but at the same time intrigued, you know?
That's the kind of, it's like, it's intriguing. And it's also just like how, there's so much darkness in our world.
Is that why people like seeing videos on YouTube when people bomb on stage too, like doing comedy or whatever?
Oh,
is it a similar sort of?
Yeah, remember there was a video out a couple years ago, it was kind of viral, about a guy who was going to freeform rap on a talk show and he just, did you know what I'm talking about? And he just can't do it. Yeah. And it's like, and people are like, this is hilarious. It's like, I've been that guy, man. It's
like, totally.
It's the worst. It's just like, and then everything just ceases up inside your brain and body and you're done.
It's like, and then what's his name? The Kramer video. Michael Richards, too, where he had the meltdown on stage that went viral.
I saw him have a meltdown before that.
Yeah.
Actually, in this theater that were, or the, I guess, the stand, the improv. Him, and I was like, oh, man, this dude's losing it. But he went off on a woman. Tiny thing. And he's a tall motherfucker.
Very tall. And his hair adds like 5 more inches.
Yeah. And so he was like in her face yelling because he dropped his tape recorder and he blamed her. And I was just like, this is not good.
Yeah.
Like he's a man.
I feel like it's like you, it's a way to, I mean, this is probably obvious, but it's like a defense mechanism. Like, you know, you're screwing up or you know, you're slipping or you know, you're falling. So you rush to blame other people instead of victimize yourself.
Yeah. He wasn't having a good set. He never really did. I saw did. And nothing. I mean, the guy's obviously a brilliantly funny man. It just wasn't his forte, to use a French word, I think.
Will Forte.
Will Forte used Will. It was Will Forte's fault.
That's
the whole
right.
Will Forte is
which
the one.
I just learned his first name is Orville.
Will
Orville William Forte. That's his.
That's a great name. Why would he not use Orville?
I don't know.
I think those kind of names are coming. I wanted to name my. If we had a kid, I was gonna a boy. We did have a kid, but I wanted to name him Elmer, and people were like, "That's just weird." And I'm like, "Old names are great. It's better than Gary."
Or Billy.
Billy. We've got enough.
Fuck Billy's.
They're freckle faced and they have a slingshot in their back pocket. Those Billy's.
Well, welcome to the CSOC show. I'm Andrew Steven. Today on the show, we're talking with Matt Dwyer. And if that name sounds familiar, that's because we talked to him earlier on the Piloting an RV episode. And if you haven't heard it, you should really check it out. He tells the story about how Amy Poehler, Del Close, Adam McKay, and him created a pilot for Second City. But in this episode, I wanted to talk to him about his journey in comedy.
I knew I wanted to do comedy stuff pretty young. And I knew Like, as a kid, like, I would watch the original Saturday Night Lives because I'm 1,000. But I was, like, 5, 6 years old, I think, maybe 7 when Saturday Night Live came out. And I watched SCTV and all that stuff. And I was just kind of, even, like, Ernie Kovacs was on reruns on PBS when I was a kid. And I just was obsessed with comedy from a very young age. And then I started reading about what Second City was. And I didn't know what improvisation was or really, and I know they also did sketch, but I just, the something about it appealed to me. And then I went and saw a show when I was 15, and I found out they do, like, they have a scripted show, and then afterwards they do a half-hour free improv set. And I was like, free? And even though it was like a 45-minute drive, I went every chance I got so often that the staff started letting me come into the shows for free, and then they started letting me hang out afterwards, and they were even, like, giving me booze and stuff. And, like, at the time, Dan Castellaneta, obviously Homer Simpson, was, like, on the main stage there, and, like, Bonnie Hunt. Like, it was crazy. And, and then I started working on the staff there and taking classes in high school. So I started doing it pretty early. By 18, I was... Not to brag, I also started doing stand-up in addition to... And I was in the funniest teen in Chicago competition that WBEZ put on. Hal Sparks actually won.
Oh.
Which is...
What place did you get?
I got a box of Frango Mints. I don't know what place that was, but I was like...
There are worse consolation prizes.
I was really obsessed with Lenny Bruce at the time, so I was... And, you know, this is, I'm an idiot, but I was trying to be political and I was making heroin jokes and I said, I was swearing, which no of the other kids, like I think I said like fuck a couple times and people were really freaked out about it. So I was really embodying my Lenny Bruce hero.
Do you remember any of those early jokes?
I did a monologue piece of like, cause AIDS was real popular back in the '80s. I can't remember anything, but I just...
So it's a shock you didn't win. Flabbergasted.
I forget what it was, but it was like a... Because they started doing condom commercials. That was it, and that was a big deal. And I was being the spokesman, Carl the Condom. I can't remember anything beyond that. I was terrible, though. I didn't deserve to win.
So what was after Second City?
I started a... thing called Midnight Bible School, which I did above Second City at one of their side theaters. It was a experimental comedy show, and the rule of it was you get 10 minutes, you could do whatever you want, it just couldn't be anything you've ever done before, and I would invite stand-ups and Second City people and, like, people from other sort of, you know, theaters and stuff in Chicago, and it was just the whole point of it was to, like, sort of push yourself and do stuff. So, like, stand-ups would be doing characters, improv people would be doing stand-up, people would be doing sketches, and it got really weird. Kind of the show struggled, and then one time, it was New Year's Day, Louis Black was in town, and he heard about the show, and somebody called me, and they're like, hey, Louis Black wants to do your show, and I was like, oh, I wasn't going to have one today, because it's New Year's Day, but I was like, fuck, it's Louis Black, we should do it, and the show was packed, like, word got out, and he was having bad sets at... Not he wasn't bad. He had a bad turnout for some reason at Zany's, and he was really pissed. And then he came to my show, and it was just jammed. And he was thrilled. And from that point on, the show was like, anytime somebody was in town, like Jeff Garlin did it, Tina Fey did it, Adam McKay did it, Sarah Silverman. Like, it was like this, and it was kind of this small like year or two of this show being like crazy busy. I lived in New York briefly and immediately knew that was a huge mistake. I remember walking down the street in the West Village and just being like, oh, fuck, I should have went that way. Because there's not, like, I don't know, it's just a limit. Unless you really want to do stand-up, and that wasn't my main goal. And then I fled to L.A., like, shortly after 9/11. Because why would you want to... The place was so cheery. And I came to L.A. 14 years ago, bumbled around and toured and started writing for some other comedians, which was... the weird thing is when you write jokes for other comedians, like I would... Because I wrote for Swartzen a little bit, and I would hear him get really big laughs off the joke, and I was like, why the fuck did I keep that for myself? Like, why would I do this? Why am I just not doing my own jokes? But I've been one of those stand-ups. You probably get this a lot, though. It was like, I quit almost every year. Like, I'm just like, fuck. I'm like, I've quit more than... And I have a show coming up, and I'm swearing it's my last show. While I'm also planning on maybe running my own show. So I'm full of shit, clearly. I'm working on, this sounds so fucking pretentious, a memoir.
It's a podcast.
True. But my teen years at Second City were pretty crazy. And it was like, my father died when I was 12, and I sort of like spun around for a few years looking where to land. And like, and it's, my life became sort of a running with scissors type thing, because Second City took me in, and I was hanging out with, like, you know, Chris Farley and like Dan Aykroyd. And I was like a teenager. I lived with a junkie blues musician for a while, and he had married one of the actresses at Second City, and we would stop and he'd buy heroin in these really awful neighborhoods, and he'd be like, don't tell my wife what I did. And I was like, you're going to be nodding off on the couch. I think she's going to put two and two together. You have needle marks on your arm. You kind of can't miss those.
I'd read it.
I'm not like to be self-aggrandizing, but it is a, I tell people the story of all of it, and they're always kind of like, oh, wow, that was kind of crazy.
Well, I think too, there's something special sort of about, I mean, that's why podcasts are popular. And that's why I think we've seen these, you know, documentaries and just sort of telling interesting stories about people. Like, there's just something, you know, that at times it can be theatrical or cinematic or just otherworldly, but knowing that there's, I mean, that's why you put based on a true story in front of your movie, even though it's like 1% based on a true story, because it just draws you in, because it's, this is real life. And I think that's always interesting and entertaining.
Yeah. That's a really interesting point. Cause I think people, or I know I have always been drawn more to smaller real type stories. And I think people maybe are a little tired of seeing everything be a fucking superhero space movie. And I think they're, that's why everyone gets really excited about these documentaries, because I think it's like,
yeah,
something smaller and a little bit more visceral than...
Totally. And the best superhero space movies are the ones where they have those real moments in them that you can definitely relate to.
Yeah, I don't hate all of them, but it's like, there's so... Every time, I'm just like...
I'm the same way.
I mean, like, I love a good popcorn movie as much as the next guy, but I'm just like, when it's like... Well, it's when people get mad. I hate when people are like, oh, everyone's pissed off because Ghostbusters is going to be all chicks. I'm like, how about that we just don't get any new ideas? Like, there's a million fucking writers in this town. Why don't we go, hey, what ideas do you have, instead of Tarzan again?
Yeah.
Or the thing where the meteor comes and hits that world. What, Independence Day? Is that what that is?
Jungle Book.
It's like, why do we need another one of that movie that I didn't even see the first time?
So then how do you feel being involved in a sort of parody of Anthony Bourdain show?
See, I was really jealous of that idea, because I was like, fuck, because I watch Bourdain, I watch all those shows, and I'm like, why didn't I think of that? Yeah, it is. Am I a hypocrite? Is that what you're saying?
No.
I'm really proud of the show. And
we're talking about Hidden America
with Jonah Ray
on CISO.
And I was really surprised. Because when you're in it, you lose all, like, towards the end of the writing process, I was like, fuck, I don't know what.
Well, let's step back a little bit. How did you and Jonah first meet?
Jonah and I met, it's funny, the FYF Fest, mm-hmm. which at the time was called Fuck Yeah Fest, and it was a small neighborhood. It took place in all the venues in Echo Park. And I saw a flyer for it and that they were doing a comedy show, so I emailed the guy who run the festival, and the guy was like, oh, cool, you're doing the festival. I was like, great. And then Jonah was running the comedy show, and he was like, what? Who's the fuck's this guy? And he didn't know who I was, and he was kind of disgruntled about it. But then we ended up doing a show together, and we became fast friends. Booze can also often help. And we both liked a lot of the same music. We were, like, you know, kind of punk guys, and we both liked booze, and we were fast friends. And we've kind of just always, we have these weird periods where we hang out a ton, and then we don't see each other forever. Then we hang out a ton. And he just asked me out of the blue to do right on his show, and I was really thrilled because I wasn't working at the time.
Was this before, because he also has the imprint now and released your album?
That was after, because I recorded the album a million years ago. I recorded that a year ago from January.
Wow.
I wasn't married yet, and I'm about to get married. And it's like, took a little time to
is
get
that to. Weird to listen back to?
It is weird, because I'm like, wow, I'm such a different person than this album in a lot of ways.
Inside Looking Out, available now on iTunes.
I'm getting married in a month and a half. Yeah, it'll be my third. Which pretty much says to my girlfriend, how'd you like to be my bronze? You're not going home a loser. Hey, everybody wins. But she's also been married, so it's like when we get to the end of the altar, just be like, really? We're buying this bullshit? Death do us part? It's more like, what? You canceled cable. See you later, baby.
Working on Hidden America was one of those moments where I was, you kind of know you're doing something cool the whole time. So even the moments when everybody wanted to punch each other in the face, not that that happened a lot, but there's, you know, there's inevitable tense moments in writers' rooms, and there's usually somebody who's driving somebody crazy. And we were all in one room. We didn't have like, see you later, gonna go to my office. But even in those shitty moments, I was like, fuck, I'm so glad to be here. Like, this is just the best. And we, for the most part, we just laughed all day.
Well, like you said, it's an amazing just concept for a show.
Yeah, and it was really just fun. And Jonah had a very specific thing that I think kind of went against a lot of what we're trained. But he wanted it to seem as real as possible. So he didn't want the stuff to seem overly sketchy, and he wanted it to be very real, which is when you're sort of trained to be like, yeah, write a joke every fucking minute. And that became a challenge, and he was very like, nope, too jokey. And when you're writing comedy, you're like, what? How dare you? But he was right, and it paid off. And I think there's some of the episodes, I mean, there's, and I don't say this like out of bias, I think it's really funny stuff, and I hope they do more.
Well, and I think too, like in a weird way too, because it is a lot of comedy and parody and sort of poking fun at things, but it made me want to like go to some of these cities too at the same time.
Yeah, and it's beautifully shot. Yeah. That's the other great thing. And I got to go to Chicago, and that was the most important for me because that's my hometown. And so I got to be like, hey, look, people, I'm not a big loser. I'm working on a TV show in my hometown.
What was it like, the process? I mean, how traditional was it? Was it you guys writing and then going out and filming, or was it like, was there improv involved?
A lot of improv
involved.
It was, we,
because there was a lot of, it seems like there's a lot of improvisers that were cast as the characters.
Yeah, there was a lot. Like Koechner's piece was a really funny piece on paper, but it's David Koechner, and that guy's going to add so much to it, and he did. So, and that just makes it, you get the best performers. It's like, how can you fail? Because we had a lot of really great talent. But yeah, we would write it in, and we would film it, try kind of word for word, and then we'd also do takes.
And just, all the writers would go to the location.
One writer would usually go. So I got to go to, unless sometimes one of us were cast in something, so we got to do, we'd multiple have two. Stuff. But it was like, and then we'd be pitching stuff on set too, because you'd sometimes shit works on paper, doesn't work on its feet, so we'd have to rework stuff right away.
Yeah, what was it like filming in Chicago?
The best. Mostly because I could drink beer all day.
Yeah.
Which I did. But it was just, I mean, it's such a beautiful city. Jonah had been there a couple times, but he's like, this is cities like Paris beautiful. And I'm like, yeah, if you're not in the Chirac area, it is quite the beautiful city. I mean, filming in Chicago was pretty, taking Jonah to two places, the Billy Goat Tavern, which is a old splendid bar, and then I took him to the Old Town Ale House, which is across the street from Second City and like a legendary place. And I've had so many over the years in Chicago, I'd have so many conversations with my comedy buddies and like about, so to go there and like sort of a full circle, get drunk with Jonah in this bar and talk about the show and comedy. And then Joel Murray joined us later, who was also in that episode, and started telling stories, which I can't remember because we got hammered. But it was just like this sort of, and I idolized Joel when I was a kid at Second City. So it was like this weird sort of young Matt, old Matt worlds coming together. It was kind of special.
Thanks so much for listening this week, and thanks again to Matt Dwyer for being on the show. Be sure to check out Inside Looking Out, his new comedy special, as well as Hidden America on CISO. And if you want to know more about Matt, you can find him online at...
TheMattDwyer.com.
Not the MMA fighter.
No.
Is it MMA or is it I think boxing it is, or something?
He's MAA or MFF.
MAA.
And then there's also a Matt Dwyer, because I keep showing people on Apple Music. There's like a sort of a Brian Setzer type musician named Matt Dwyer.
That's fun.
Yeah, we needed another Brian.
I've been working on this.
We just kept on talking. You know, I'm just going to leave it in. But thanks again for listening, and I'll see you all next time.
Oh, every Christmas. Who doesn't go see the live Brian Setzer show?
I thought it was... I don't even remember. I pronounced his name wrong for the longest time. I was adding letters, taking letters away.
Brian Setzers?
Yeah.
Brian Setzers? Setzies? I wonder Setzies. If, like, every Christmas he's like, fuck, I gotta go. Like, because you know that's his bread and butter.
I
now.
Don't know, because that's the thing. So I once tweeted, like, what the hell does Mannheim Steamroller even mean or whatever? And I got a tweet back from Mannheim
really?
Steamroller. Goes like we get this question every year or something like that. And, like, they said, like, here's a link or something. So, like,
what is it?
I don't remember. It's not important. It's Mannheim Steamroller.
I
think there is a level where, like, did you see that Gawker piece that just came out about Smash Mouth?
No, but you have my interest.
Apparently, they get a lot of, like, tweets from people essentially saying you're only popular because of Shrek, because they had a song in Shrek.
Yeah.
They covered the monkeys. Song I'm a Believer or whatever, but and they respond to every single one saying, actually, you know, Walking on the Sun was a number one hit and All Star was on its way into the top 10, like type thing. And it was just sort of so I think there's that, and they're at a level, I mean, they're still selling out shows and stuff, not as big as they once were, but I think there's that level where it's like it almost is a pain, but then I think you reach another level where you're like just happy to be working. So I wonder if Brian Setzer is at that level.
That's
this
true.
This has turned to, like, mean, mean corner.
But that's true. I mean, it's like, I mean, you know, there's certain comedians who played giganto venues and now they tour smaller venues, but they're probably just thrilled that people still, you still love doing
it. It's the Joan Rivers on Louis show where she talks about you play the huge things and you play the small things and you're just happy to have a job.
And as you get older, too, and as your ego gets destroyed, mm-hmm. I mean... There's like the 20-something guy that I was where I was like, fuck yeah, I'm great. And then reality hits and things don't go the way you think. And then you're like, oh, okay, well. And you're like, oh, I'm just doing this to be creative and because I love it. Yeah. You forget that you get into this bullshit because it's fun. And once you stop having fun, then you lost your way. And yeah. I think a lot of people do that.
Amen.
Amen.